Welcome, everyone. This is The LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, April 17, 2010. My name is Marcia Mary Baker, and our topic for discussion today is the British ploy for the U.S.-Israeli assault on Iran. That is, this threat, which is being highly escalated, it threatens global chaos, and it poses the question yet again that President Obama must be put out of office by impeachment or just go away. Now, with us to discuss this, we have, speaking to us from Stockholm, Sweden, Hussein Askari. Welcome, Hussein.
Thank you, Marcia. I'm happy to be with you.
And you'll see from the EIR online that for the Executive Intelligence Review, Hussein Askari is the coordinator. He's actually the Arabic language editor for Executive Intelligence Review, and he's datelined and based in Stockholm, but he has been in recent weeks in Iran, and I refer people especially to look at the April 2nd issue of EIR for an article by Hussein on this topic that we're going to discuss this today. Now, the second thing is, during the second half of the program, we hope we will be joined at some point by Harley Flanger, who you all know well as frequent host of The LaRouche Show. But right now, he's going to be speaking to us from Los Angeles. He's at the Democratic Party Convention of the State of California, which is being held this weekend. It's underway in Los Angeles. There are, I think, about 3,000 people there. And Harley Flanger is the spokesman for Mr. Lyndon LaRouche, for the Western States spokesman. And he will have a lot to discuss about the dynamics in the United States, but from the vantage point that we're going to hear from Hussein. I'm going to hear him lay out in a minute, because what we're seeing right now is a fierce escalation of the British imperial kind of manipulations, dirty operations toward a strike against Iran, towards an escalation of the United States and other military in Afghanistan, aimed right at all of Eurasia. And these two things coming in this world breakdown context are in themselves a kind of two-track disaster, but they continue deadly imperial schemes and geopolitical manipulations by the financial crowd in London that have been going on for some time. But the thing is, they can't continue forever. There is a danger that this kind of operation will succeed because of the nature of President Obama and how he got in office and who he is, and the United States will be dragged into carrying through these policies, backing Israel if they attack Iran, continuing a land war in Asia, which is insane. So that's why we're discussing it today. This has to be stopped. Now, Lyndon LaRouche, in recent days, in the last couple of weeks, has said go all out to put a spotlight on this, thwart this, expose this. And it's not just the two parts of the world I mentioned. There are a coincidence of other hot spots and subversions and so forth around the world. But let me just say, on May 8th, that will be a Saturday, Mr. LaRouche himself will have an international webcast to discuss the situation and what has to be done. That's May 8th. He will start it at 1 p.m. Eastern time, and we ask all our listeners to tune in at that time. But here in the United States, there's been a reaction. Hussein Askari and Harley Schlanger will be discussing it later, among the general population, that if you say we ought to bomb the poppy fields in Afghanistan and not bomb Iran, people get torqued in a very good way. However, I'm speaking now of inside the United States, everyone is being subjected to an intense media campaign that Iran is the evil that has to be stopped or else. They're really mind control kind of British manipulations going on. I'll just review quickly and then we'll go right to what Hussein has to say. But the House and Senate of the U.S. Congress have passed certain kinds of bill each on sanctions that have not, these bills have not gone to conference committee to reconcile them. However, meantime, the drumbeat continues. This past April 14th, the Senate Armed Forces Committee held a hearing on Iran, and there was a drumbeat that something has to be done. They're going to have a nuclear weapon in Iran in a relatively short period of time, that kind of thing. At the same time, over in the House of Representatives, a letter was sent to the White House, signed by 363 members of the House of Representatives, calling for fierce sanctions against Iran. So this is all being orchestrated while the man on the street around the country in the U.S. is hit with loss of job, loss of medical care, hopelessness, and so forth. And then you get this orchestrated focus on attacking Iran. At the United Nations, it's really her controllers, which are really out of London, are deploying Susan Rice, the United States ambassador, there to work over the Security Council to push through some kind of sanctions against Iran. And then you have one of the biggest things that happened in this past week is that you had the 2 to 3 day nuclear security summit in Washington, D.C., that brought together some 50 heads of state or the equivalent from their respective nations, which behind the scenes, as well as somewhat publicly, became the occasion for President Obama to pressure governments that they have to fall in line against Iran in the name of this and that, preventing nuclear weapons, so forth. So this is why we organized today's discussion. And just to underscore, Hussein, I just noticed that the latest issue of The Economist nudges Obama to do more. I think they have two articles saying, you're doing good, but not good enough. Do more. Yeah. And the same with BBC World, that I think they give an update and say, which foreign companies like Daimler Chrysler are still trading with Iran when they shouldn't be, you know, that kind of thing. So yeah. I want to turn right to you now, Hussein Askari, to go into what are the entire picture, the relevant specifics on the operations that we're seeing, and the British pedigree, the history, anything relevant, and what the hell is the British goal behind all this? Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Marcia. Well, that's a fairly good introduction to the situation, but also, I mean, the situation is very, very inflammable and dangerous in the whole region, but even around the world. I mean, under the smoke of these conferences, which seems people in, you know, nice suits, and they are conferring and talking to each other, it sounds like a peaceful atmosphere. And also, there's even in Iran today, there is a conference, actually, on nuclear security, where they invited 60 countries to. And interestingly, the conference title is Nuclear Power for All, Nuclear Weapons to None. But what shows there, I mean, you had even representatives from China, Russia, India, in addition to non-aligned movement countries, which shows that there is, on the other side, a certain defense of Iran's position among many nations, but also the need for solving this whole situation with diplomatic means. But, you know, people in the United States and Europe are playing with the issue of imposing sanctions on Iran, but they don't really see the whole picture. It's not the United States or Iran that these two are in conflict, or even Israel. But you have a crazy gang in government in Israel, very, very dangerous, and they are being encouraged by a U.S. president to launch a military attack on Iran, including actually the use of nuclear weapons. All this is, you know, taking place, remember, when time is running out for the dying British Empire and its whole financial system. So they are desperate to have this happening very soon. And there is a number of dates coming up of interesting events, which we can take up later, why this is becoming so pressing now. But the intention to impose sanctions on Iran is not to stop Iran from producing or acquiring nuclear weapons, something which even the United States National Intelligence estimate a couple of years ago said Iran could not do in the foreseeable future. But this is the big lie. The British and their men in the United States and Europe want the people in their respective countries to believe in. It is exactly like the lies they spread by former British Prime Minister Tony Blair.
Yes.
On Iraq's capability to launch a devastating attack on all of Europe and Britain with chemical weapons within 45 minutes, if they wish to. And that lie was used to dupe the international community into accepting the invasion of Iraq in 2003 by the British and the Bush-Cheney administration and other U.S. allies. The intention behind the invasion of Iraq, first of all, was expressed by Blair himself several years before the invasion and even before the 9/11 attacks 2001. Actually, in a speech he delivered already in 1999 in Chicago, he openly advocated the nullification of the most important principle of the Peace of Westphalia Treaty, which is the universal principle of the sovereignty of all nations. And that, he said, that should be removed for world government to work. Now, the intention behind the new set of sanctions against Iran this time is not to invade Iran or take its oil or any of that stuff. It's actually to start a war and a chain reaction in order to launch a new wave of destruction of civilization itself. Now, Iran is not Iraq for many reasons. I could explain later in the show. And you cannot really destroy the Iranian nuclear program physically so easy unless you use nuclear weapons, which President Obama and the Israelis have declared they are capable of doing. But this is not the only problem. What you have to worry about is the reactions and ramifications of such an attack from Iran and its allies and all over the world, actually, and then the third wave of counter-reactions and the chain reaction of events that will follow. But actually, in order to understand this whole situation, one has to look at the larger context of the world situation now. And I hope the listeners will have some patience with me, but because it's very important, because people will not get it. I mean, Mr. LaRouche and the EIR, we attack the British for being the authors of this policy and the British Empire, but people not always get it. And therefore, they have to get into a bit of detail of what is the situation, why, and who the British Empire is in this case. I mean, first of all, if you look around the world, you know, as if you are looking at Earth from an observation station in space, and also backward and forward in time, what do we see? First of all, we see the greatest financial collapse in known history, with the center of the collapse is in the city of London, the official seat of the worldwide British monetarist empire, which is a global empire. So people are not mistaken. It's not a national English entity. It's a world empire, like Venice was the center of empire, a financial empire, before the great crash of the whole Mediterranean financial and trade system, which inaugurated the new or the Dark Ages at the time in the 14th century and the Black Death, through the collapse of the real economy of Europe, the infrastructure, agriculture, and manufacturing, even in Asian regions. A similar collapse is also taking now around the world. And secondly, what do we see more is we see a clear declaration of the intention by British Empire institutions, the British government itself, the British monarchy through the Worldwide Wildlife Fund, and such servants of the empire you have on the other side of the Atlantic, like President Barack Obama personally, and actually even institutions of the United Nations itself are supporting this British Malthusian policy to reduce the world population to less than 2 billion people. Those 2 billion people will be living in primitive conditions with so-called limited resources of the planet controlled by British, or if you wish, Anglo-American raw materials and food cartels. So that declaration of intention was made in the December 2009 Copenhagen Climate Conference, but was actually temporarily defeated. And it was defeated by a group of nations, which will bring us to a very special observation of this, the constellation of nations that defeated the Copenhagen climate change agenda. And which includes nations like China, India, and also other nations from Africa and developing countries. Almost all of them were former British colonies. Now, these nations came together to defend the principle of national sovereignty against global government and empire. They launched also a ferocious fight, a defense of their right for economic, industrial development and high technology, including nuclear power. So if you take a step back and put Russia in that constellation, you will find three or four powers, the fourth being the United States, but not in the picture and not cooperating with them, who have understood to one level or the other, or, you know, certain factions within these governments have understood Lyndon LaRouche's proposal for the four powers strategy, that these four powers, Russia, China, India, and the United States, would lead the way for a new international financial and economic order, and collaborating as sovereign nation states, creating a new credit system, you know, putting the whole British monetarist system into bankruptcy reorganization, and put the credit system in the service of to build and develop economic infrastructure in and among nations through investments in high technological transcontinental transport, water, energy, including nuclear power, in order to sustain an ever-increasing world population at higher and higher living standards. So in other words, we are looking at the world with these ideas, not simply as observers from outer space. We are not observers. We are often participating in developing these political developments. But we come back to the surface of the planet as shapers of the atmosphere and the noosphere. And Mr. Lyndon LaRouche's personal and Helga Tsepp LaRouche and associates of the LaRouches have had a years-long intervention with ideas shaping actually the surface of the planet at this very moment, as has been done through the introduction of the Eurasian land bridge concept, which is now official Chinese policy and Russian and Indian policy. Iran, Turkey, and other nations in that part of the world also are part of this big work. So with the intensification also of the space exploration cooperation among all these nations, we will then be able to go back to our observatory in outer space and move from there to the future. But, I mean, believe me, you and the LaRouche Youth Movement are part of this, part of both transforming the noosphere and also, you know, opening the door for the future. I mean, when my colleagues and myself and others working with LaRouche or the Executive Intelligence Review traveled to East Asia, Southwest Asia, Africa, and so on, this is what we are told by officials, economists, and others on what is going on with the LaRouche movement's ideas. They just lament the fact that the United States and the U.S. administration has not yet joined this historic development, which will, as LaRouche has explained, will never work without the U.S. participating in it. So, okay, this is the situation. So the four-power strategy, which has included a renaissance for nuclear technology after four decades of deep sleep, we hit the British Empire from different directions. First of all, we buried the rotten financial system it controls through bankruptcy reorganization. We restore the damaged principle of national sovereignty. We kill the Malthusian genocidal myth of overpopulation and limited resources, and so on and so forth. And I tell you, the British don't like it. I mean, last week, the Financial Times of London, they had an article which launched a wild attack on the Chinese Silk Road strategy as a threat to the British Empire and its allies. So what do the British do to keep their dying empire? Well, they have something called divide and conquer. It's the same tactic the Venetians used in the Crusades and the British used in the last 200 years, especially in the Middle East, where I come from, or Southwest Asia. And the war in Afghanistan, with the global opium war attached to it, it is destabilizing all major potential powers who are supposed to be part of the four-power strategy, working in the United States, not against the United States. If you attack Iran, you will set up the whole region for sectarian and religious wars, which will spread to Central Asia, South Asia, Southwest Asia, and into Europe. You can never foresee, of course, in detail what will emerge in such a situation, but you can foresee the dynamic, and it looks very, very ugly. I mean, through that, the British Empire will put the brakes on the development of an alternative world economic system and pave the way for a massive population reduction, not only through wars, but as Bertrand Russell said before, the most effective way is through economic collapse and actually through epidemics. I mean, so the British have an intellectual control over the policy through spreading the lies, first they did about Iraq, or now about the Iranian nuclear program, as Blair did, and is still doing from a very poisonous power position very close to the Obama administration. He's also very close to the Israelis and pro-Israeli forces in the United States, Congress, and elsewhere. So you see even the lies that were made by the Bush administration about Iraq's capabilities before the invasion. These came from Iraqi opposition groups such as Ahmad Chalabi, everybody knows him, from where? From five-star hotels in London. But these were financed five-star hotel inhabitants by U.S. taxpayers' money through the U.S. State Department. But the factory of the lies was centered in London. And they were pushed from that standpoint. Now, many of the so-called secret information about Iran's nuclear weapons intentions comes also from Iranian exile groups such as the British-based and protected Mujahideen-e-Khalq organization, a terrorist group, who very often come up on British television programs and conferences saying that we have the latest information about the Iranian nuclear bomb. So anyway, in my recent article you mentioned, I refer to the spreading of the idea by British diplomats of the fact that it were better to impose sanctions on Iran rather than having Israel bomb Iran. And I mentioned one British diplomat who was traveling around the world, and I cited him in my article, Deputy Director of the British Foreign Office. His name was Nicholas Hopton. He was in Brazil recently pushing the sanctions line as an alternative to a war on the Brazilians, who are now in the Security Council, but obviously they are not really buying that option because there is opposition like the Chinese, the Russians, the two other permanent members of the Security Council, that the sanctions themselves could lead to actually reactions which could then lead to a military confrontation. Because what Susan Rice was pushing in the Security Council this week, that the new sanctions should include the right for international forces to stop and inspect Iranian ships to search them for material, nuclear materials, this would be a provocation which will push the Iranians into knee-jerk reactions or military reactions, which will then be used to attack the Iranians by proving that the Iranians have these evil intentions. But the whole situation is creating a psychological climate. All these lies, which are produced by the British and then pushed as U.S. Policy, they create a psychological atmosphere where you make it almost all right that somebody does something against the Iranians. And the Israelis are always ready to do that service for the British Empire. But they don't know exactly how it will end up. And the problem is that the U.S. President Barack Obama, in every speech, every interview, every press conference now, is reinforcing that sense that it were okay to attack Iran by even using nuclear weapons.
Right. I think just for our audience here, illustration what you said that's very obvious is when President Obama made this the big point when he and President Medvedev in Russia signed a joint treaty, in the question and answer period, President Obama said, now by spring we can arrange to have sanctions against Iran. And this was just an echo of what Tony Blair personally said in January to the Chilcot Committee in England, that Iran is now the current issue. So, as you say, the script is very clear.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is that the British usually can hide, get away with this type of warmongering. You have a problem that this becomes a serious thing when U.S. officials, such as Susan Rice now, or Cheney, Condoleezza Rice, or even Colin Powell earlier, came along and made these British concocted lies U.S. official policies. And then people will see the Americans, including the U.S. president, pushing this line in public, while the British then withdrew to the backseat, letting the Americans get the backlash. So, I mean, the Iranian nuclear fuel enrichment process and this whole crisis around it became a real crisis in 2005-2006. I just wanted to give you an example. Tony Blair at that time, at the second half of 2005, was the chairman of the rotating EU chairmanship for 6 months. And as the chairman of the European Union, he issued a call to Iran. It sounded like a friendly proposal, as if he was a representative of all Europe and the United States, and telling the Iranians that they should really scrap and abandon their nuclear power program because it does not fit them, and that they will be compensated by Europe and the United States with money and other energy resources. So at that point, the Iranians stopped all cooperation with the International Atomic Energy Agency's observers and removed them from the country and also from the enrichment sites, which they had a very, very good relationship with Iran. And we were very close to an agreement between the Security Council members, the United States, and the Iranians on finding a clear mechanism for, to inspect the Iranian program without having trouble. So, but Tony Blair comes in as if he's proposing something nice to the Iranians, but the effect is that to freak out the Iranians. So you can call it a typical knee-jerk reaction. Now, the Iranian leaders have been fixated on the so-called U.S. Great Satan, or the empire, the American empire, even when it is actually the British who are running the show. But usually from the British act from their hidden position as the puppet masters. You know, the puppet master is usually up behind the curtains. What you see are the puppets. You don't see the puppet master. And in this case, actually, one of the most dangerous puppet masters is Tony Blair. I mean, it's not an exaggeration to say he's the most evil man in current history. The Iranians, the British are a key element in the attack on Iran. As they, said then during the riots we saw last year after the June presidential elections, and the Iranian government came out and said it is the British Foreign Office, it's the BBC, it's British spies who are running these riots in Iran. But then they cannot see the British role beyond being an ally of the United States. So we in the Executive Intelligence Review and the LaRouche movement are the ones actually who are trying to educate both the Iranians and the American people of the problem of the empire. What does that mean? So the British not only get away with it, I can give you a funny example, they will also try to benefit from the mess they create economically. As I wrote in a recent article about Iraq, on the situation in Iraq in EIR after the Iran report, I mean, there are 7,000 British soldiers were pulled out from Iraq last year, and they were in the relatively calm southern part of Iraq in Basra. And then after withdrawing the troops, they sent the oil companies to Iraq instead. So now since January, the British Petroleum Company, British Petroleum BP, and Royal Dutch Shell control the development of two of the largest Iraqi oil fields, Al Rumaila and Majnoon fields. These are two of the largest oil fields in the whole world. And they are located next to Kuwait and the Gulf, by the waters of the Gulf, which is also British-controlled economically. But on the other hand, you have what? You have the U.S. taxpayers now spending hundreds of millions and billions of dollars to have the more than 100,000 U.S. soldiers shot at in the landlocked areas of Iran. So it's a bit of an irony because in the situation of Iraq, the United States is paying the price, but actually the British oil companies are reaping the benefits. So not only they get away with it, they benefit from the misery they create for all sides.
Right. Well, let me ask, I want to get, we're not leaving this at all, but you mentioned some dates upcoming. But first let me ask, has Harley Schlanger joined us from Los Angeles?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, great. Welcome, Harley. I explained before that you are speaking to us from the Democratic Party Convention of the State of California. And Hussein may have questions for you, too, now in the next half hour that we're continuing. But may I ask you briefly, Hussein, you mentioned in passing that there's in the upcoming days and weeks, there are key moments in this process that you've just been describing. Could you just say what they are?
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, we have the escalating financial crisis in the Eurozone, in the Interalfa, Banco Santander group. So you have a situation where the collapse of the monetary system is escalating day by day and week by week. But then we have a situation now in the coming period where the intensification of the discussions in the United Nations Security Council is going to take place. Some of the rotating members will be changed, like Jordan, for example, will be on the United Nations Security Council for a period. The Brazilians are still there. So there will be changes at the end of April, beginning of May, which will not be in favor of the idea of, you know, getting the vote for the sanctions against Iran. You have also the coming up in July, you will have the inauguration of the Iranian nuclear power plant in Bushehr.
Mm-hmm.
And the Russians are involved in that. I mean, the Russian president, or prime minister, actually, Vladimir Putin, mentioned that there will be the inauguration of the power plant, which has been delayed for a long period, coming up in July. Iranian officials say the same, and this would be the first, of course, and the largest nuclear power plant in the region in decades, and somebody wants to actually stop that process before it's ripe, and also the fact that the Russians are supervising the whole process will make it more difficult for anybody to attack the Iranian sites because you will have Russians on the side. But also coming up now, the major offensive, which was declared by the U.S. commanders in Afghanistan at the end of April in the southwest Afghanistan, which is adjacent to the border with Iran. So you will have an escalation of the military operations in that region with next to Iran, but also an escalation of the propaganda and the so-called diplomatic works to get the sanctions resolution going. And they will try to get a foot, even if it's a little toe in the door, because what they want is to create a provocation and get China, Russia, and others along in that process. So a lot of things are coming up in the coming period, which will make it more and more intensive and more dangerous situation.
Right. Well, Harley, that's how we began. It's very tense and dangerous, but it's our opportunity, and we're going to not, you know, we're going for it. Maybe you want to jump in here with this subjective dynamic in the United States, but anything particular from California, go right ahead.
Sure. Well, it's also tense and dangerous at the California State Democratic Convention.
Okay.
Hello, Hussein. How are you?
Hi.
Well, let me just start with this picture that you've been discussing, because what's missing from the Democratic State Convention and what's missing from U.S. politics in general is this strategic overview. You would not know from showing up at this Disney-like atmosphere at the Los Angeles Marriott Hotel and Convention Center that we're in a world which is veering dangerously toward potential nuclear strikes in the Middle East, and also a point at which the financial system is about to completely disintegrate. What was most interesting is the atmospherics are very thin. You know, the idea that the Democrats in California are a juggernaut, they're going to sweep the governor's race this time and reelect Barbara Boxer, all the bravado is belying the reality, which is that none of these guys have a clue what to do. So I'll just give you two simple paradoxes that our forces brought out from our presence there. We're there with very large force of LaRouche Youth Movement organizers with two big banners. One is just the standard impeach Barack Obama banner. The second one is a new one of showing Obama standing in the middle of a poppy field with the Hitler mustache visible on his upper lip. And the caption is, Obama, from hero to heroine. And these banners are surrounding a large chorus, which is singing beautifully. Now, what I encountered inside the convention from everyone I spoke to, including top state officials, elected officials, and others, the first thing they said is, you've got to do something about that mustache. It's hurting your cause. It's terrible. We can't have it there. Don't you realize what this means? And then I would say, but it's the truth. Obama is pushing Hitler-style policies. Not a single person at this convention will defend Barack Obama. Then what they do say is, well, but don't you think the economy's getting better? And after I pick myself off the floor laughing, I say to them, are you kidding? Look at the unemployment in California. Look at the foreclosures. Look at the collapse of the euro. Look at the disintegration internationally of trade. What do you mean we're having a recovery? And then they change the subject again. So it's these two paradoxes which actually are at the center of the strategic crisis. The failure to recognize the truth about Obama, number one, is the most dangerous thing facing the Democratic Party and our nation, by the way. And secondly, the failure to grasp the simple fundamentals of LaRouche's economic analysis, his forecasting, and also his solutions. Those two problems are dooming our nation to what Hussein was just discussing, supporting a lunatic lunge by the Israelis into Iran, the sanctions which will guarantee a war, and trapping the United States into a long, futile war in Afghanistan and the surrounding region.
Right. Hussein, do you want to put any question here? I have more, but I know you've been thinking from an international vantage point, looking at the United States, looking at the White House. What would you care to bring out anything at this point?
Yeah, I mean, maybe for Harley, if I wanted to ask him, because there we always have the problem that from within the United States, first of all, we don't get a clear picture, or the public don't get a clear picture of what's going on in the United States, both positive and negative things, because even the news reports are controlled by, you know, British or British-affected, you know, newspapers, reporters, and channels, so you don't really get any idea. And also what they do is they reinforce the view that the United States is a big empire, there is no way the United States could change, and so on and so forth. But that the dynamics of the internal situation in the United States and the forces that are active, including the LaRouche movement, that has to be brought out. But what could be achieved immediately now, and how? And you mentioned the question of the impeachment of Obama, but people say, isn't there any other way to get a smoother change of the U.S. situation?
Well, there's not, because there's really not, because the impeachment of Obama, bringing that up, breaks through the fog of this idea that Obama's an American president and it's an American empire. Obama's not an American president. He's not doing a damn thing for the American people. He's a British puppet, plain and simple. And that's the first thing we have to get people to realize. Now, a lot of Americans sort of like the idea that maybe we are the big empire and we're the good empire. But they have no conception of the levers of control that are used by the British Empire to control the dumb Americans. So the first thing we have to do is we have to puncture that myth that the United States is the superior power in the world, is an empire. And, you know, all what Lynn has been writing about this in the Niall Ferguson question, who is a spokesman for the British Empire and is putting forward this American empire view. But this goes back quite a ways. So that's one problem. But the other side of it is, and this goes back to this discussion of how you're hurting your movement by putting the mustache on Obama. I have a simple answer to them. Keisha Rogers, a LaRouche Youth Movement member running as a Democratic candidate for a congressional seat in Texas, campaigning for the impeachment of the person she described as the Nazi Obama, won 53% of the Democratic Party votes. Now, one of the responses I got last night was someone said, well, that's Texas. That's not California. Well, the fact that in a state like Texas it happened ought to send out alarm bells, because that's the second largest state in the country as far as population. But secondly, we're going to see the same thing. We're already seeing it with Rachel Brown in Massachusetts and Summer Shields in San Francisco. Rachel's running against Barney Frank and Summer against Pelosi. So to answer Hussein's question, what we're doing as the LaRouche movement in the United States is, first and foremost, we're telling the truth. There is no recovery. The health care bill was not about health care, but about killing the elderly, the poor, and the sick. The Obama administration is not an American empire. It's the tail end of a collapsing British empire. And the ability to defeat it is there because the American people are angry. There's a new form of the mass strike, which is maybe not quite as visible, but it's there everywhere in the country. Angry people looking for solutions. And those solutions are simple. The global Glass-Steagall, the end of the bailout, and so on. So that's what we are bringing forward. But the first necessary step is to communicate to people, you don't know what's happening. If you're not on the LaRouche PAC website, if you're not watching Off the Cuff twice a day, if you're not reading and following the latest from LaRouche, you don't have a clue what's actually happening in the world. And that is a big problem in the United States, as you mentioned, Hussein, the controlled media. It's not just people in Europe who don't know what's happening here. Most Americans don't know what's happening in our country.
Right. And let me throw in here for people that I think it's the third, I'm not keeping exact count, of the video features on the LaRouche Political Action Committee that's come up in the last 48 hours on the whole this whole thrust in Afghanistan, the British Opium War, and so forth. The latest is called Yes, the Queen Does Push Dope. So people can look for that. And, Harley, let me throw out to both of you what I hear speaking of the mood in the United States, the good, the bad, the ugly, and the beautiful, there's been all of these rallies this week under the banner of Tea Party and otherwise, which is quite a brew. But it's come to me that many people have said when LaRouche Political Action Committee were out organizing, there would be points of engagement. The thing has got so bad where you could people would respond. For example, when it was said, okay, there's all this talk on the television night and day this past week and the president of the U.S. meeting with 50 heads of state that we have to have sanctions against Iran. Well, we had sanctions all of the 1990s, and that led to an invasion. That was one point. Another point is the Tony Blair. Hussein has spoken a lot about Tony Blair. Tony Blair did it to Bush before and got us into war, and he's doing it again now. So these were among the, I mean, Harley, do you find, it's not exactly one or another thing, but there are many things where there are moments of engagement, do you think?
Oh, you can engage most people on almost any issue right now. It's just that you have to cut through the bull at the beginning. Because people, you know, at the Democratic Convention, for example, people want to be overheard saying the right thing. So the first thing they say is, I don't like the mustache. And so we say, so tell Obama to shave it off. You know, he's the one who put on the mustache. We're just portraying the reality. So I find that and I do, as you know, Marsh, I do a lot of radio,
yes.
And I'm on populist conference calls, and, you know, people start ranting and raving, Obama the Muslim, Obama the socialist, all these things. And you just say, look, forget all that for a second. Our country's being destroyed by our historic enemy, the British Empire. Obama's nothing but the latest puppet they've put in there. The question is, are you an American? Do you understand our constitutional tradition? Do you know how we can launch a strike at the heart of the British Empire? And at one of the meetings I did recently, I think it was up in Boston, someone said, well, shouldn't we send an ICBM into the city of London? And I said, we have two ICBMs that we can hit the city of London with. One is a real war on drugs by destroying the poppy fields and going after the money laundering. And secondly, a global Glass-Steagall. That's a multiple entry warhead that will wipe out the city of London. Those two things. And the only country that can do it is the United States in an alliance with Russia, China, and India, with the LaRouche plan in the wings to rebuild the world economy. So people want to discuss these things. This idea of too much government, which the Tea Party people say. Well, what do they want? I mean, Bush was pushing deregulation. Do they want more deregulation? They want more Goldman Sachs thievery? So I think that the first and most important thing that Lyndon LaRouche emphasized in a discussion I had with him this morning is you've got to say to people, you're running from the truth. The real problem is you're afraid to face reality. The reality is we've got a British puppet in the White House, and we've got American system solutions provided the American people break out of their illusions and take up responsibility. And I think people want to do that. It's a little difficult. You sometimes have to insult the American people to get their attention.
I mean, adding to that, I mean, people also around the world, because of the LaRouche movement and Lyndon LaRouche's personal work, people in the United States have to be grateful for LaRouche and the LaRouche movement that the United States is not 100% hated and despised, because they see there is something special with the United States that can bring the good force, which can bring a positive change. And people have been eager to see a positive policy, because they know that the United States is not like the British or the French old empires. They see something different, and they are looking especially to seeing the United States implementing Lyndon LaRouche's outstanding economic programs and the peace initiatives, like the Oasis Plan for development of the Southwest Asia region. But then they look at at congressmen now, and they look at Obama, and they are getting fed up with all these long speeches because, Arabs, they don't like politicians who give long rhetorical speeches because it reminds them of their own leaders. Rhetoric, big rhetoric and sloganeering is equal to lies in the ears of the population, the Arab world. They have seen Obama after an initial interest in him, that he has actually obstructed the Hillary Clinton's peace initiatives by not supporting her and putting pressure on Israel. He has been totally passive to Israel's atrocities against the Palestinians. So now people see that, and they wonder, what is Barack Obama? What is it that's moving him? Who's whispering in his ears? The problem is that people usually tend to say, oh, it's the Zionists, it's the pro-Israeli lobby. But it's, it's called Tony Blair. Called the British royal family. But there is, people all remember the U.S. intervention in 1956 by President Eisenhower against the triple British-Israeli-French aggression against Egypt, which was seeking independence from the British Empire. And Eisenhower put his, big feet down and said, you get out of there otherwise. And people respect that. People see that as, this is a special thing. America has a special background and history. And when they see the LaRouche movement in action, they realize what that is. They just need to see more of it all over the place. And that people really support it, that people really, understand what Lyndon LaRouche is talking about the American history and also the question of economics. Because this is something even for people outside the United States is a very vague, very unclear idea.
Harley, you're still there, right?
Yes.
Yeah, good. We heard something in the background. And do you want to say more about the three candidates that you mentioned in terms of the special quality of the U.S., putting that forward?
Sure. We had a very successful weekend, last weekend up in Boston. I was there for the Rachel Brown campaign. We had a fundraiser Friday night. We had a cadre school in her district in Taunton, Massachusetts on Saturday. And there's some coverage of that up on the Rachel for Congress website. People can pick that up from the LaRouche PAC website. But what Rachel did during this week was she directly took on the Tea Party movement, and she said to them, if you're serious about the fight to save the American system, don't just talk about tea parties. You have to organize for the American system. And we had a very effective intervention using LaRouche's triple curve to show people that if you destroy government because of your anger at Obama, all you're doing is giving more power to the British you claim you oppose. So Rachel has a very forceful intervention going there. Today, the Keisha Rogers campaign took part in this annual event in Deer Park, Texas, which is part of the Texas Heritage. And we marched in the parade, and people along the parade route were chanting, "Go, Keisha, and save NASA, get rid of Obama." We had little girls joining us saying, "Help us save science." And then in California, besides being deployed at the convention, we had a very successful town meeting Friday night, or Thursday night, rather, in Los Angeles, where Summer Shields, who's taking on Pelosi, Summer spoke. Cody Jones from the basement team gave a very excellent, provocative discussion about the 5-billion-year perspective of the sun blowing up and why we have to start working today to deal with that. And then I spoke about the obsession in the United States with money and monetary policy, which is what the British did to create this crisis in the first place. Now, I think the most important thing we have to realize is that we have four prongs of what's really a LaRouche presidential campaign. We've got the three congressional races, with Keisha having already won the Democratic primary. Rachel's in a Democratic primary in September. And Summer, because Pelosi's kicked him off the ballot, so he can't run in the Democratic primary, Summer will be a write-in candidate in November. So the three campaigns will be going through most of the rest of this year. The fourth prong is the LaRouche PAC videos. And these are putting forward in a very highly animated and passionate form the ideas of LaRouche. Now, otherwise, what do you have out there? The Republicans have no program. They've got no ideas. What are they going to do, bring back Bush and Cheney? And on the Democratic Party side, if the Democratic Party insists on sticking with Obama, it's going to disappear. It's like jumping on the Titanic. So the alternative for people is, if you want to defend the nation, you want to defend the tradition of the American Constitution, join with LaRouche. And to the extent that our organizers bring that out, and bring it with two additional flanks. One is the science question, not just NASA, but the work that's going on cosmic radiation and the implications of a Moon-Mars mission for much deeper probe into deep space and real science. And then secondly, the use of the choral dynamic, the choral principle, to bring beauty. I mean, Marcia, you'd really appreciate this. We're out on a street corner outside the L.A. Convention Center, which is really like a Disneyland without Goofy and
Minnie and Mickey.
Minnie and Mickey. Although if you look at some of the Democratic leaders, they're actually there. They're just in disguise. Now, here you have an ugly downtown center, and you all of a sudden are struck by beautiful singing, and you look and see where it's coming from, and you see the LaRouche Youth Movement chorus, but then you're also struck by the fact that they have these banners of Obama with that disgusting Hitler mustache. And so people are forced to have that juxtaposition between their fantasies and reality. And so it's working beautifully. This is the only way that we're going to be able to move the population of this country.
Right. Hussein, because we only have a few minutes left, if you want to ask Harley something, otherwise before the time is out, if you
No, just quickly, I comment because what Harley said just now about the youth inspiring people, because although the situation is very, very dangerous, there's also an enormous opportunity because of the collapsing of the empire itself and also the dynamic in the population all over the world that we can actually get the right solution on the table. It's like we are in a place between heaven and hell, purgatory, which very small changes, you know, might tip the balance. But these changes have to be very pointed and sharp, like Keisha's campaign. But with a little force, you can achieve great change. And the rest of the world is actually ready. When I was in Iran and talked to people about the potential for economic development, Iran is a nation of young people. 60-70% are under 30 years. You know, you talk about nuclear power, magnetic trains. Everybody says, yeah, sure, we should have these things. Should have the best technology we can get. We can to develop. We can sustain 10, 20 billion people. So there's enormous optimism in the midst of the danger because people can see that a slight shift can change the whole situation. And this is what we have been working for more intensively.
Right. The question I had that you raised in the first half hour, though, you said that there's – do you want to say something about – you said Iran is not Iraq. You may want to say something more about Iran to make it – to bring out things for people.
Yeah, I mean, Iraq was an isolated, weakened country with no friends, no allies, no capability of defending itself or causing any damage to its opponents. Iran is different. I mean, it's a major power. It has allies all over the place, if not all over the world. It has asymmetric capabilities in the region and internationally where they can strike and, you know, even though they cannot stop the aggression, they would be causing enormous damage, but that would also lead to the chain reaction I mentioned. But also, I mean, Iran is in a place where if it's affected, it will hurt all of other countries around it in Central Asia because you have the ethnic sectarian divide which has been promoted by the British and the Bush-Cheney administration, like the Sunni-Shia conflict. It will split every nation in the region, all Southwest Asia, Central Asia, into small, small, small warring entities run by warlords, drug gangs, and all kinds of things. So it's a very different situation. I mean, just look at the situation in Iraq. I mean, you have 100,000 U.S. soldiers, but to form an Iraqi government, the politicians had to go and discuss it with the Iranians. So much influence the Iranians have in Iraq. So, I mean, even the Saudis do have, but the thing is that Iran plays a key role, whether in this negative sense, but also Iran's potential for the collaboration. I mean, you look at the situation in Afghanistan, Iran could help a lot the United States and NATO in Afghanistan, stopping the drug trade, for example, the smuggling. But so Iran could play a positive role. Iran has a key position in the whole Eurasian land bridge strategy as a bridge between Europe and South Asia, so on and so forth. So it's a totally different picture you look at when you see the situation in Iraq and the situation in Iran.
Yes, what are there? 74 million people in Iran.
Yes.
And on the drug issue, do you want to, I mean, people should be clear, I understand a high percentage of the Iranians are coming under addiction from this British opium.
Yeah, according to UN surveys and so on, I mean, about 20% of the Iranian population is affected one way or the other by the invasion of heroin and opium and, you know, hashish from Afghanistan. And people see that the British-U.S. invasion of Afghanistan has contributed to that problem. And now even it's flowing into Iraq, which was previously a red line. There are no drugs at all in Iraq. Now the drugs are going also from Iran into Iraq. So the Iranians see that they are threatened not only militarily, that they are threatened by this inflow of drugs at much, much cheaper prices than before from Afghanistan.
This was an important point we were making at the Democratic Convention, that this drug issue cuts always, besides the funding of the terrorism and the terrorist networks, that it also is poses an existential threat to the United States. And the fact that the President of the United States would be defending or in any way allowing for the continued trafficking of drugs and money laundering is an outrage and should be another grounds for impeachment. And on that, even somewhat cynical members of the Democratic Party said, well, I'll have to look into that. That does sound bad. So I think this is an area where we can rally the American people to defend not just the United States, but all the countries in the region around Afghanistan, to recognize that this is an example of British imperial policy and not in the interests of the United States.
Well, that brings us to a close, and I thank you. We are for laying out what the present-day picture of the British opium war we're going to shut down means. Hussein Asghari in Stockholm, Sweden, Harley Schlanger in Los Angeles at the Democratic Party of California State Convention. And I remind everyone, May 8th is the international webcast by Lyndon LaRouche, May 8th. It will be on a Saturday. It will begin at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And I thank everyone. This is the end of the April 17th, 2010 LaRouche Show. Thank you.